From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I'm deeply concerned about civilians trapped in active hostilities in numerous areas, and I urge all parties to take effective action to enable all civilians, including those in situations of vulnerability, to safely leave areas affected by conflict.
As the number of refugees fleeing Ukraine tops 2 million, the United Nations urging Russia and Ukraine to allow all civilians trapped by the fighting safe passage. As we mark International Women's Day, we'll go to Ukraine to speak with an LGBTQ activist who just fled Kyiv to Lviv. Then we go to Moscow to speak with the head of the Memorial Human Rights Center, which has been ordered shut down as part of a widening crackdown on Russian civil society.
We see that all these harsh repressions and growing pressure towards the anti-war protesters and independent media voices was also prepared by the kind of pressure that we experienced before, by the foreign agent law, by the law on undesirable organizations, by the laws that included journalists and all kinds of activists to these categories.
Plus, we speak with Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, the first African refugee to become a member of the U.S. Congress. We'll talk to her about the Russian invasion, the plight of refugees across the globe, and the recent U.S. bombing in her home country of Somalia.
Bring our attention to Somalia. Am I correct that all of the airstrikes conducted there under President Biden had been justified under the doctrine of collective self-defense?
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Ukraine has accused Russian forces of shelling evacuation routes for civilians seeking to flee the Russian invasion. Ukraine's foreign ministry says Russia violated a ceasefire agreement to grant safe passage to civilians in the southern coastal city of Mariupol for a fourth day in a row. Speaking from his office in the capital, Kyiv, on Monday night, President Volodymyr Zelensky slammed Russia for reneging on an agreement, he said, for a humanitarian corridor and for the Kremlin's offer to evacuate civilians only to Russia and Belarus.
They even mined the road that it was agreed would be used to bring in food, medicines for children, for the people of Mariupol. They even destroyed buses that are meant to evacuate people. At the same time, they opened a tiny corridor leading to the occupied territory for a couple dozen of people.
Residents of Mariupol describe a dire humanitarian situation with constant artillery fire, no heat or electricity, despite freezing temperatures. Some residents have reportedly been forced to drink from puddles amid shortages of food and water. Elsewhere in Ukraine, at least 21 people, including two children, were killed in an overnight strike in the northeastern city of Sumy. Another Russian attack killed 13 civilians at an industrial bakery in the town of Makariv, west of Kyiv. Four civilians were killed by Russian mortar fire Sunday as they tried to cross a partially destroyed bridge over the Irpin River. Despite the killings, hundreds of civilians continued to make the journey Monday.
We are from Irpin. There was heavy shelling in Irpin. They fired at houses, people. A woman and a 13-year-old child died. All houses were shelled. A few people left here. It is hard and scary. It is a war. It is fascism. It is genocide against the whole Ukraine. Glory to Ukraine.
The European Union says leaders will meet at a summit this week to discuss ways to phase out the EU's dependency on Russian fossil fuels as it seeks to punish Russia over its invasion of Ukraine. The EU currently imports about half its coal and gas from Russia and about a third of its oil. In Washington, D.C., White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said Monday, President Biden has not yet reached a decision on whether to ban U.S. imports of Russian oil.
I would note that what the president is most focused on is ensuring we are continuing to take steps to deliver punishing economic consequences on Putin while taking all action necessary to limit the impact to prices at the gas pump.
Over the weekend, the Biden administration sent a delegation to Venezuela to explore easing oil sanctions as it searches for new sources of energy to replace Russian fossil fuels. The United Nations says more than 2 million people have fled Ukraine since the start of the Russian invasion less than 2 weeks ago. It's the largest and fastest displacement of people in Europe since World War II. More than half the refugees have crossed into neighboring Poland. This comes as hundreds of members of Ukraine's minority Roma population, many of whom are undocumented, report they've been turned around at border crossings and have faced discrimination while trying to flee Ukraine. In Puerto Rico, rights activists are reporting a group of 9 Haitian asylum seekers have been stranded on the island of Desecheo for days without food or water and are in need of urgent medical care. A scuba diving and sailing boat spotted the group over the weekend but was unable to navigate closer to the island located off the west coast of Puerto Rico, so staff contacted the Coast Guard to rescue the group. Democracy Now! Spoke to Catherine Edgerton, an abolition advocate who works with the crew that found the refugees.
We saw some people waving a red cloth from the island, and we got closer to see that there were 9 people on the beach waving for assistance. So we called the Coast Guard, and the Coast Guard directed us to not approach, to not offer assistance. When they didn't show up, we packed up some provisions, water, into bags that I could carry, and I swam them in. There were 9 people on the island, one of whom was very ill. All of them were very dehydrated and sunburned and quite desperate for help. They had been there for 3 days. So I swam back to the boat and we called the Coast Guard again. They assured us that they were on the way. And yeah, we were horrified to see 24 hours go by with no Coast Guard.
The Coast Guard has now involved Customs and Border Protection. In a statement, CBP told Democracy Now! Agents were expected to retrieve the Haitian asylum seekers from the island today. Advocates are demanding the asylum seekers be allowed to stay in the United States without the threat of detention or deportation. The United Nations warns conflict in northern Ethiopia has escalated in recent months with widespread reports of civilian deaths, rapes and other atrocities. UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet said Monday her staff recorded 304 deaths and 373 injuries attributed to the Ethiopian Air Force since November.
During this period, Ethiopia's human rights and security situation deteriorated significantly, in large part due to the extension of the conflict in Tigray to other parts of northern Ethiopia. Our office continued to receive reports of severe and wide-scale human rights violations in the context of expanding conflict in Afar and Amhara regions, as well as in Tigray.
The UN also warned of a deteriorating human rights situation in Afghanistan, where nearly 400 civilians have been killed in attacks since the Taliban takeover last August. The Biden administration's released a mentally ill torture survivor who was held at the Guantanamo Bay prison for nearly 20 years, most of that time without charge. Mohammed Al-Qahtani was diagnosed with schizophrenia long before his capture in Afghanistan in 2001. His condition deteriorated further after he was rendered to Guantanamo in 2002, where he was subjected to 20-hour-per-day interrogations for weeks in which he suffered physical, sexual and psychological abuse. Al-Qahtani's lawyer, Shaina Kadidal of the Center for Constitutional Rights, said, quote, Mohammed has always belonged in the care of psychiatrists, not in a prison. He survived being tortured and detained at Guantanamo through enormous personal courage, and we're very hopeful that with proper treatment, with his family nearby, he'll learn to manage his symptoms and salvage the remainder of his life. The number of confirmed deaths from coronavirus passed 6 million worldwide, 2 years after the start of the pandemic. Researchers believe the true toll is far higher, with disease modelers at University of Washington estimating more than 15 million people have died of COVID-19. Here in the United States, hospitalizations have fallen far below January's record highs, but nearly 1,500 people a day continue to die of COVID-19 in the U.S. on average every day. In Florida, the Surgeon General, Dr. Joseph Ladapo, on Monday shrugged off advice from the Centers for Disease Control that children get vaccinated.
the Florida Department of Health is going to be the first state to officially recommend against the COVID-19 vaccines for healthy children.
The Florida Surgeon General is an anti-mask vaccine skeptic and a proponent of the widely discredited theory of achieving herd immunity through natural infection, which Dr. Anthony Fauci has called nonsense and very dangerous. The Florida Surgeon General was appointed by Republican Governor Ron DeSantis, who last week bullied high school students for wearing masks as they stood behind his lectern at a public event.
You do not have to wear those masks. I mean, please take them off. I mean, honestly, it's not doing anything, and we got to stop with this COVID theater. So if you want to wear it, fine, but this is ridiculous.
Governor DeSantis has refused to apologize. His campaign is using the incident to raise funds. Meanwhile, one of the teenagers who he told to take off his mask's mother is immunocompromised and has spoken out. Elsewhere in Florida, protests continue against anti-LGBTQ plus legislation known as the Don't Say Gay Bill that would prohibit discussions about sexual orientation and gender identity at schools. Thousands of students led a massive walkout at Winter Park High School in Orange County, Florida, yesterday, chanting, "We say gay." Hundreds more students, teachers, and allies gathered outside and inside the Florida State Capitol in Tallahassee Monday as the bill is now being considered by the Florida State Senate. The U.S. Supreme Court's rejected a bid by North Carolina and Pennsylvania Republicans to restore electoral maps that were struck down by lower courts as illegally gerrymandered. In a 6-3 ruling, justices ruled electoral maps redrawn by courts should be used instead. In Hawaii, the Defense Department is permanently shutting down the Navy's Red Hill fuel storage facility on the island of Oahu. Native water protectors and environmentalists have long fought to close the underground fuel storage. Pressure mounted after a petroleum leak contaminated the water supply that serves over 90,000 families around the naval base of Pearl Harbor. The site also threatened the water safety of other communities as it's located just 100 feet above the primary groundwater aquifer for Honolulu and the rest of Oahu. The Red Hill bulk fuel storage facility has been used since the 1940s to provide fuel to Pearl Harbor. And thousands of women around the world are taking part in streets to mark International Women's Day today. Actions took place across Turkey, India, Bangladesh, and other regions in recent days. Marches in Pakistan were met with the threat of violence, but women's rights advocates vowed to move forward with rallies in Islamabad and other cities. In Mexico, activists denounced the growing number of femicides in the country. A blimp was seen flying over Mexico City Monday with the words, 10 femicides per day, and no victim is forgotten. Meanwhile, Bolivian feminist groups protested in the capital, La Paz, Monday.
Justice for us all. We have come to demand justice. We have sons and daughters who are crying in our homes, and the judges and prosecutors are not interested in justice. Are you not born of a mother? Do you not have sisters? We only ask for justice.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show looking at Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which has entered its 13th day. The United Nations says over 2 million refugees have now fled Ukraine in the largest exodus in Europe since World War II. Ukrainian officials say civilian evacuations have begun after Russia announced a temporary ceasefire in some of the hardest hit areas, including the northeastern city of Sumy, where 21 people, including 2 children, were reported killed in airstrikes just hours before the evacuations began. But Ukraine has accused Russia of shelling civilians fleeing Mariupol, the besieged southern port where many residents have gone days without food or water. Russia is also accused of continuing to attack civilians in Kharkiv, Ukraine's second largest city, which has been devastated by days of Russian attacks. One Ukrainian woman named Marina said she was hit by shrapnel from Russia shelling when she went to donate blood. She spoke to Reuters while sitting in a wheelchair at a hospital.
My brother and I came to give blood and we were shelled. The blood transfusion center was shelled. We had just left the center and we were shelled by Russian occupiers. And my brother died on the second day, February 27th. And I remained in hospital with shrapnel wounds in my legs.
Earlier today, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet.
Welcome back to CKUT. It's time for a little weather. Wednesday will be a mix of sun and clouds and a high of 2 degrees Celsius. Thursday will be mainly sunny with a high of 1 degree Celsius. Friday will bring wet snow and a high of 2 degrees Celsius. Saturday will bring mixed precipitation and a high of 0 degrees Celsius. Sunday will be mainly sunny with a high of minus 5 degrees Celsius. Monday there will be a few flurries and a high of 4 degrees Celsius. And finally, Tuesday there will be a light snow and a high of 4 degrees Celsius. Measuring the mundane, close to each other, two bodies attempt to coexist. The shapes and fabrics intertwine to the point where it becomes difficult to determine where they belong. Unforeseen complications arise as intentions turn into actions. Overlapping decisions generate constraints. Finally, by giving in to the decisions of the other in search of a compromise, we tend to complicate what should have been simple. With us today, we have Sydney McManus. Hi, Sydney, and welcome to the show.
Hello. Good morning.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be the choreographer for the theatrical presentation 1, 2, maybe 3.
So my name is Sydney McManus. I am a dancer and choreographer and multidisciplinary artist here in Montreal. For 1, 2, maybe 3, I actually co-created and co-choreographed the piece alongside Jean Bowie. So we are a duo, an artist duo that making this work together. And we started creating the piece in 2018 as a 10-minute duration and exploration. And then from there, we expanded the piece to a 30-minute piece for Off TA in 2019. And now it is 2020 and we're doing the full length for the public very soon.
Who is involved in the production of 1, 2, maybe 3?
Jean and I, Jean Bowie and I are the choreographers and the creators of the piece. And for this performance coming up, I will be performing it alongside Keanu Uchida, who is an artist from Toronto and now living in Montreal. The piece is also in collaboration with the visual artist duo Penelope and Chloe. Throughout the piece, we work with a lot of like fabric and we asked them to create the scenography for the show, and they created this beautiful backdrop that we work with that is really colorful, really playful. We've been collaborating with them since Off TA, and we found like a really, really nice relationship with these artists. The playfulness that Jean and I have as choreographers found true in their visual artwork. So it's been a nice collaboration with them. We also have Roxane Bédard as the lighting designer for the show. Nate Yaff is our outside eye, giving us some feedback. He's been a part of the project since the beginning. And we are also part of the LACER delegation and production program. So LACER has been helping us for the past 2 years from conception into production of the show. And they've really been helpful to bring this piece to life.
Which societal issues does 1, 2, maybe 3 address?
This show is really about the banal, and it works with minimalism. We're trying to, as the starting point for Jean and I, we didn't want to make something that was very like grand and large movements, and we wanted to almost like reject what is usually done in a theater in terms of like large productions, lots of movement, lots of dynamic movement as the in dancers. And we kind of honed into this very like simple, minimal, gestural research. And so being that we started this right before the pandemic, when life was very alive and busy and fast, we wanted to hone in on the smaller things that often get lost. In the piece, we work with a lot of objects, we work with one another, and we're not trying to project any kind of narrative onto the audience. We're really allowing for a lot of space for you as a viewer to kind of question the assumptions that you have of us on the stage. Like Jean and I working together, there is no, we're trying to eliminate any like power dynamic between the two of us, between all of the objects that we have on stage. And as an attempt to remove any hierarchy between the ensemble. So on a larger scale, I guess I would say that the piece is really trying to allow the viewer to question the assumptions they have, the narratives that they assume. And if we could erase that, if we could go to a place where there is no there are no rules that we've set for each other, and we're all like just discovering, playing, and creating more space and being more patient and finding interest in the small details and really getting to know something for what it is and not what we assume it to be.
What is the story you're telling in 1, 2, maybe 3?
The story, like I said earlier, there's no real story. It's really Jeanne and I playing, working with objects, trying to treat everything equally. So there is no true narrative throughout the entire piece. We create images, we give reference to some things, but as a viewer, it kind of is like from picture to picture to picture, and you get to like fill in the blanks and have like autonomy on how you want to perceive the show. We're just there to like play and offer ideas for you, and then you can really make what you want of it. The show kind of has this "it is what it is" or "it is what you want it to be" kind of mentality. So the audience really becomes important in determining what it is. It's really up to you as the viewer.
What is the run for this presentation of 1, 2, maybe 3?
We will be performing it March 9th, 11th, and 12th at the Santour Theatre as part of the Wildside Festival. It was originally supposed to happen at La Chapelle in January, but due to the lockdown, we moved it to now. So yeah, as of next week, we will be in the theatre on Monday setting up, and then you can come see us the 9th, 11th, or 12th.
Which target audiences will be seeing 1, 2, maybe 3 over the next year?
The show is really, can be for anybody, because the piece is colorful. It's really playful. We use objects. We create compositions with the large fabric that Penelope and Chloe have made. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's a show made for children, but children can definitely see it. It's not just targeted to dancers, because it's not this like grand gestural physical show. It really is made for anyone. Anybody can see it. So yeah, it can be for whoever wants to come.
If our listeners want more information or to buy tickets, where should they go?
They should go to the Santour Theatre website. You can also go to the La Chapelle website and be redirected, or the La Serre website for more information.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Sydney McManus, choreographer for 1, 2, maybe 3, speaking about her play. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
You don't belong here, those eyes for an ocean view
and the moon,
and we California dreaming from a city where that's so taboo.
Taboo.
We always chase sunsets, we settle on the stars and moon
and the moon.
And if I tell you about me, I hope you tell me what you've been through. We are the same, baby. Pray for love, yeah. Sunsets in May remind me way more of us, yeah. What's more to say when I've been out different state? Hope I can show you I made it out. Can't hold me down. You told me hold my hand. Just follow me, I'll show you golden land. And diamond water for a hopeless man. And all these things that you know, I know, I know. You said you don't belong here. Eyes for an ocean view
and the moon.
And we California dreaming from a city where that's so taboo.
Taboo.
We always chase sunsets to settle on the stars and moon
and the moon.
And if I tell you about me, I hope you tell me what you've been through.
Been through.
chasing this high, and all the pain in my eyes turned cold. December came by, those storms don't ever break mine. Yeah, I was told to make it right, king of my city, frame white. You held it down on break light. I learned these things take time, just take time. Hold my hand, I'll change your life. We both made plans, don't fade to lie tonight and tonight. You said you don't belong here, those eyes for an ocean view
and the moon, and the moon.
And we California dreaming from a city where that's so taboo. Always chase sunsets, but settle on the stars and moon.
And the moon, and the moon.
And if I tell you about me, I hope you tell me what you've been through.
Hello there, and welcome to In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, a bite-sized, informative podcast that's aimed to be listened to while you're in the shower, but really, you can listen to it anywhere at all.
The whole point of this podcast is that we debunk the mysteries of the world, those questions that you never knew you wanted the answer to, in a fun, informative way.
Listeners send in questions they have always wondered the answer to, and we debunk them. Thus far, we've answered questions like...
What are pins and needles?
Where did the idea of a three-course meal come from?
Why do dogs always stick their heads out of moving cars?
Speaking of animals, can animals and humans reproduce?
And loads, loads more. I guess you could say...
We expand your mind while you wash your squeaky behind.
And this week is no different.
But before we get stuck into this week's question... Ooh. While you're on your phone or laptop or wherever you're listening to In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, open it up, open up the app you're using, click that little subscribe button, and if you're feeling extra generous, give us a rating and a review. Those are the little things that let more people like you find more people like us.
It bumps us up the charts and it bumps you up in our hearts.
Oh, Marcus.
Cracking out the rhymes tonight. So, this week's question.
This week's question comes all the way from Toronto.
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 From a Miss Lauren Jamie, and she asks...
What are allergies? This week's question comes all the way from the home of Drizzy himself, Toronto.
Hang on, who's Drizzy?
Drizzy, Drake. OVO, you know, started from the bottom and now he's here.
Oh God.
He'll take care of you.
Oh God.
He only loves your party, he only loves his bed and his mama, but he is sorry.
Oh no, oh no, oh no. Marcus, tell us the question.
Okay, well, you know what? Maybe I like some of Drake's tunes, okay? Well, okay, so this question comes from native Torontonian Lauren Jamie, and it falls at a perfect time of year for us. She's asking, why do we get allergies?
First off, is somebody from Toronto called a Torontonian?
Torontonian, yeah.
Torontonian, really?
I'm pretty sure it is.
So am I a Mullingarinian?
Mullingarinian. Mullingaralian. There you go.
That is such a good question, though, because it's been in my mind as well. As soon as the winter ends and we look for the bit of heat, with the sun comes the pollen, and when you're supposed to be out frolicking through the fields of flour in the sun, fields of wheat, you're reduced to a giant ball of schnapps.
It is actually the worst, isn't it? Like, you're properly just like... Like, you know, like, even when we did the cliff walk there recently, you're walking through and some of our group were just, like, blowing their noses when you're walking through those fields at the end.
Hay fever is the worst.
Hay fever is the worst. Do you have any allergies? Actually, you don't really get hay fever, do you?
I don't get hay fever. I have an allergy. I will say I have diagnosed myself with this allergy, but I do not agree with pine nuts. If I have pine nuts, I get super, super, super crampy. And restaurants always try to sneak them into sauces and pesto. And I genuinely feel so powerless getting disabled by a tiny little nut.
You know what? Yeah, you think you're in charge and then kaboom! pesto.
I know. Pesto is not the besto.
Forget the resto. Anyway, I looked into why we actually get allergies, given the season that's in it, and Lauren's question, and pollen counts being as high as they are.
If you can tell me why and then give me a cure at the end, I will be eternally grateful, because pesto, I want you to be my besto.
Pesty bestie?
Pesty bestie.
Anyway, so let's start this episode just with the reassuring and comforting fact that your body is under constant attack, like literally all the time. Constantly being bombarded from the outside with bacteria, germs, viruses, parasites and allergens and more.
Nice reassuring way to start the episode, Marcus.
Yeah, well, listen, luckily, over the years, we've become pretty good at defending ourselves. And our immune systems are generally pretty badass, keeping all of the nasty stuff out and stopping us from dying really easily all the time as soon as we get in contact with anything nasty.
The good old immune system always has our backs.
And our fronts and our bottoms and generally everything that's contained within our body. So basically, when we encounter an antigen for the first time.
Hang on, what's an antigen?
So an antigen is a foreign body which can set off an autoimmune response. So like bacteria or parasite or anything like that. Every time your body encounters a new one, it learns how to defend itself from it in future. So the first time might affect you, but the second time you will know how to defend it. That's why people don't generally have an allergic reaction until the second time they're exposed to an allergen.
Ah, okay. So give me kind of a short explanation here.
Okay, so in short, an allergic reaction is a bit of a screw up by your body, and it kind of comes down to a bit of a misunderstanding.
Okay.
As I said, when you encounter an allergen or an antigen, your body learns how to create antibodies to deal with it and get rid of the threat, which, you know, by all accounts is great.
Is that why we get injections growing up?
Yeah, so it's kind of the same concept. Like it helps when you get vaccinated for something.
Immunization, is it?
Yeah, when you get vaccinated by something, it's teaching your body to deal with a threat by putting a tiny, generally like dead amount of the illness in you so that you can fight it if you ever get exposed to it.
Yeah.
But in the case of allergies, your body confuses the likes of pollen or dog hair or, like, you know,
Pine nuts.
for a serious threat and absolutely freaks out, which creates your body to produce a surplus of antibodies, which releases a load of plasma and a thing called histamine, which leads to all of those juicy symptoms like hives, itchy face, runny nose, and in some cases, like full-on anaphylactic shock.
First off, thanks for describing those as juicy symptoms. Probably the most disgusting way you could have described.
Well, do you know what? They are juicy because they create. So basically, your mast cells, which like contain all this plasma.
I can tell I'm not gonna like this.
Yeah, it opens them up, and that's where all of that fluid comes from.
Oh,
basically,
God. That's not good. So why do some people's immune systems freak out at the slightest bit of pollen or shellfish, and then others not?
Well, as you can imagine, genetics and environment have a lot to play here. For example, it's thought that having early exposure to pets, like in the first year of your life, can drastically reduce chances of allergies to animal dander due to your body becoming used to it very early on. So, you know, if you've just had a baby, consider throwing a puppy in there. I just like puppies and babies. Send us pictures
of
your
puppies. That's very interesting, actually. Mm-hmm. That's why a lot of people who grew up in cities may have hay fever.
Uh-huh.
And can you genetically inherit allergies? Like, I don't want my kids to have a fear of pine nuts the way I do.
Well, kind of. Kids born to couples where one parent has an allergy are 33% more likely to develop allergies themselves.
Holy crap.
But then when both parents suffer from allergies, that number jumps up to 70%.
And is that just allergies across the board?
It seems to be. It just kind of like, obviously it can be a bit specific, like peanuts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems to be just kind of slightly, yeah.
Okay.
But again, exposure to allergens during early development are key. And I mean really early exposure. So researchers at Henry Ford Hospital found that children born via C-section are 6 times more likely to be sensitive to dust allergens than babies born naturally. Because they don't get exposed to all the good stuff that's chilling out in their mother's birth canals.
Oh my God, that's so interesting. So what? Why is that?
So basically, it's thought that the microbiome that's found in the birth canal teaches babies right from the moment they're born the difference between good and bad bacteria, or certain good and bad bacteria in some way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So kind of like the last little bit, just before we release you into the world, is the last bit of knowledge your body needs.
Literally Zelda style, it's dangerous to go alone, take this.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So come here, growing up in the countryside, we were always out, you know, playing in the fields and in the dirt and whatnot. And we're always exposed to animals. And myself, my brothers and my family are all healthy in general. Are those two kind of things related?
Well, you weren't exposed to pine nuts, clearly. Yeah, there's a theory behind the fact that rates of people who suffer from allergies in the Western world are going way up, and why allergies are way more common in wealthy developed countries than they are in poorer developing countries.
Okay.
Yeah, it's called the hygiene hypothesis.
Right.
Basically, everything is so clean and disinfected all the time in the West that we don't really get exposed to all the viruses, bacteria and parasites that you might be exposed to in developing countries. So when your body does encounter something nasty later in life, has a bit of a meltdown. A really good example of this would be Deli Belly. Okay. So it's not necessarily an allergic reaction, but say if you, you know, only eat in like sanitized areas in the West and your kitchens are nicely disinfected and everything, and you go over to India and you have something that was cooked in a cart in a street in a hot city where there's loads of flies and everything everywhere, you're going to be sending some gravy rockets out your bunghole pretty shortly. And like,
but people are surviving on that every day.
Yeah, but people that like you're over, if people, the people over there are absolutely used to it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and that's the thing, like if you go over, it's worth, say, like brushing your teeth with the tap water, because that's just a tiny amount that you're not swallowing, but your body's getting to take it in.
Interesting.
Yeah, like, do you know what? Expose yourself to that stuff as much as possible. Go and, I'm not saying like eat dog poo or anything, but like, you know, go roll around in the mud. You're okay.
So basically, we get allergies because our bodies mistake innocuous substances for nasty ones and then kind of provide an exaggerated autoimmune response by releasing histamines and plasma. So technically, it isn't the peanut that's causing the reaction. It's your body's reaction to the peanut that's causing the reaction.
10 out of 10. You absolutely nailed that explanation.
Which kind of leads to the typical allergy symptoms.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Absolutely.
So is there a cure for allergies?
Well, the most common thing that people take are antihistamines.
Yes.
But the thing is, they just kind of make your symptoms recede. They okay. don't make you any less allergic.
Okay, so obviously antihistamine, your body produces histamine. It's kind of an obvious thing what's going on there.
Yeah.
But can your body build up a tolerance gradually? Like say if someone has really bad hay fever and they find the love of their lives who lives in a cornfield in the middle of Ireland, can they move down there, or will they always be plagued by asthma?
You actually can. You actually can, but just for respiratory allergies.
Okay.
So using a thing called immunotherapy. Basically, you're given tiny but ever-increasing amounts of whatever it is you're allergic to, be it dust or pollen or animal dander. I really like saying animal dander. It's fun to say animal dander. So you're given tiny amounts of that, either by injection or orally, until your body learns how to react to them normally. But obviously this can be costly and it can take months or even years to have a proper effect, depending how long you want to space it out. So it's not ideal.
Yeah, that's very, very cool.
Well, actually,
go on.
Do you know what? You can actually do it. You can do a thing called rush immunotherapy as well.
Okay.
I just found this after I'd done a bit of research. Rush immunotherapy is basically a week-long, non-stop, intensive exposure to what you're doing and
that
increasing
sounds like
stuff.
Hell.
It is hell. There's accounts of people who do it who are like, it's generally when people suffer from really severe allergies like hay fever or dust allergies where they can't function normally. They have to go through this. Apparently,
holy
it's like
shit.
The longest week of your life, you're constantly suffering and it might not completely even take away the allergy.
It sounds like
but
coming off heroin cold turkey or something.
It is kind of like that. Yeah, except they're injecting things into your body instead. But yeah, so I mean, that is only generally used in the case of extreme allergies, but yet rush immunotherapy is a thing that happens.
That is absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute random fact that has no relevance really to what we were just talking about, but a relevance to allergies. I remember I met a guy in Chicago when I was living over there, and he had a severe, severe peanut allergy.
Right.
And from as long as he was, from as long as he can remember, anytime he wanted to kiss someone or hug someone or shake someone's hand, he had to ask them whether they had eaten peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that so insane?
Well, I know, I remember hearing a story about a guy kissing a girl in a disco and going into anaphylactic shock because she'd had like satay for lunch or something.
Oh my God.
How scary is that? Like, honestly, you kiss someone and then you die because they had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich yesterday. That sucks.
That is very, very bad. All
absolutely
you're doing is having
sucks.
Your PB&J and you've killed a man.
Exactly.
That was a very, very interesting episode.
There you go. Yeah.
And kind of what we can do about them.
Mm-hmm.
Get yourself trapped in a room with that evil substance.
Yeah, rush immunotherapy.
That's absolutely insane. Do you have any allergy facts to wrap this episode up?
I wouldn't really be an episode of In the Shower if we didn't drop some facts. Obviously, yeah, they're not the happiest fact.
Go on, give us these no doubt extremely happy facts about immune confusion. Probably a lot to do with animal dander.
Animal dander. That's the one good thing about this episode. I've learned what animal dander is. Like, next time I walk into someone's house where they have a pet and there's hair, I'm going to be like, cast thine eyes upon the fields of animal dander. Anyway, so allergies are the sixth biggest cause of chronic illness in the United States, costing upwards of, wait for it, $18 billion every
Holy
year.
Holy shit, that is a lot of Kleenex. Any more?
Yeah, so early on in the episode and all through the episode, we mentioned hay fever. The term hay fever actually refers to allergic rhinitis, which basically means you're allergic to plant pollen. People thought it was a sickness you caught from cutting hay back in the day, so the name stuck. And while it's possible to be specifically allergic to hay, you'd have to be really unlucky because it's pretty rare.
Hey!
I'm allergic.
So everybody, that is what allergies are all about and how we can possibly get over them.
So, Lauren, Jamie, next time you're running through the six with my histamines, you know how that shit go. See, I'm glad that I could work in a Drake lyric.
You should see him right now. He's absolutely beaming.
I am beaming.
The pride is oozing out of
Honestly,
every pore
I look
of his body.
Like, I look like Drake in Degrassi when he's just smiling all the time.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of In the Shower with Taz and Marcus. If this happens to be one of your first or your second or your third episode of In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, good news, there's over 40 episodes for you to binge listen to right now. Questions that you've always wondered the answer to. Questions that will make you a more interesting dinner party guest. Get involved, have a binge listen, and let us know what you think.
Absolutely. That's like 15 hours of non-stop learning.
Non-stop learning.
Probably
and
more.
Facts. Yeah.
Imagine how sexy your brain would be after that.
If you like what you're listening to, please, please, please get in touch with us and let us know. All you listeners are invisible to us, so we actually don't even know if you're listening. I could just be talking to you right now, Marcus.
You are talking to me, but hopefully you're talking to people all around the world. So do give us a shout. And if you want to do that, whether it's with feedback, or you just want to say hi, or you want to send us pictures of your puppy, or of course, if you have a question for Taz and myself to answer in the shower, this is how you get in touch with us. If you're on Facebook, just look up In the Shower with Taz and Marcus. Or if you're on Twitter, look up at In the Shower Pod.
If you want to get in touch with us via email, send us a question, send us a picture, send us your love. You can get us at intheshowerpodcast@gmail.com. And I repeat, intheshowerpodcast@gmail.com.
And I repeat, send us pictures of your puppies.
Please. And puppy dander.
A couple of thank yous to wrap up this allergic episode. Thank you to all the crew in the Head Stuff podcast studio, Alan, Paddy, and all of the crew. Big up you, you big sexy legends.
Next up, thanks to Flo Robinson for our lovely cover art. I get to see you on Tuesday, Flo, and I'm very excited.
Unfortunately, the rest of you don't get to see Flo on Tuesday, so you're just going to have to use your imaginations.
She's fab.
She is brilliant. A final thank you to the excellent Dave Gertzman, who came up with our theme music. You can find him on Instagram at Dave's Record Rama. If you need a jingle or anything else, please do look him up because he is class.
But most of all, thank you so much, you, for listening and dedicating your ears to us for the last 15 minutes. We really, really hope you have a magical week and that you give yourself a pat on the back and say, well done for getting up this morning, well done for killing the day, and it's going to be a good week.
We love you.
We love you so much.
Next week's question, Taz.
Next week's question is one that was sent in just yesterday from avid listener Luna O'Neill, and she asks, what does okay mean?
We'll be answering that next Monday in time for your morning shower. But in the meantime, keep scrubbing.
This has been a production of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
Cette pièce de piano peut vous sembler bien banale. À moins que l'on vous dise que c'est Jeanne, encore prof à 81 ans, qu'il a apprise à la petite Chloé lors de ses cours cette semaine. Le Québec est riche de ses aînés. Reconnaissons leur contribution. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
Stay, hope I can show you I made it out. Can't hold me down. You told me hold my hand. Just follow me, I'll show you golden land. And diamond water for a hopeless man. And all these things that you know, I know, I know. You said you don't belong here. Those eyes for an ocean view. And we California dreaming from a city where that's so taboo. Always chase sunsets to settle on the stars and moon. And if I tell you about me, I hope you tell me what you've been through. Yeah, I'm always chasing this high, and all the pain in my eyes turned cold. December came by, those storms don't ever break mine. Yeah, I was told to make it right. King on my city, frame white. You held it down on break light. I learned these things take time. Time. Hold my hand, I'll change your life. We both make plans, don't fade to light tonight. And tonight, you said you don't belong here. Those eyes for an ocean view. And we California dreaming from a city where that's so taboo. Always chase sunsets, we settle on the stars and moon. And if I tell you about me, I hope you tell me what you've been through.
Still, it tells me.
Well, that wraps up the Wednesday Morning After for this week. Keep on listening to CKUT.
In the case of symptoms similar to those of COVID-19, such as fever, cough, sore throat, loss of taste, or smell, you should take a rapid home screening test. If you test positive, isolate yourself at home and please follow the self-isolation instructions. If you don't have a rapid home screening test, please self-isolate for the recommended period. Visit quebec.ca/self-isolating for complete instructions on how to protect yourself and others. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec. COVID-19 vaccines have helped protect us. Over time, the antibodies created after vaccination have been found to decrease. While we still have good protection against severe illness, a booster dose produces more antibodies that can help to strengthen our immune response. A booster dose is the best way to help protect yourself against severe illness related to COVID-19. Learn more and book your booster dose at canada.ca/COVID-vaccine. A message from the Government of Canada.
You're tuned to CKUT 90.3 in stereo, Montreal, and on the web at ckut.ca. This is another edition of Terminal 5. I'm your host this morning, Jeffrey Davison. Glad you could join me, and stay tuned.